and welcome to the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. My name is Goff, and today I am joined by a very special guest. This lady is a counsellor. Not the psychology kind, but the city council government kind. She's also been in the Australian Defence Force and also a foster parent. It's Shelley Curtis. How are you today, Shelley?
I'm excellent, Goff. How are you?
Yes, very well indeed. Very well indeed. Now, as I said in the intro, you know, you serve the community as being a city council member and also, you know, the ADF obviously serving the community and a foster parent. So my first question, Shelley, is what the hell is wrong with you? Why not be a selfish jerk like everybody else?
Oh, I think we all have that, a bit of that in us, Goff, definitely. No, look, I've had a very privileged upbringing. I've got two wonderful parents, raised us in an idyllic part of the Gold Coast. And so I've got capacity and we have a family, really supportive family in a great neighbourhood. So, you know, when you have all those things align, there's just a sense of duty there that you kind of need to give back.
Okay. Sorry, I thought that was a middle of a sentence, but there was a full stop. That's totally fine. So, all right, well, let's chat a little bit about being a foster parent to start with. Now, obviously, for legal reasons, we're not going to be talking about any specific cases or children or anything like that. It's just your general experiences and your general thoughts. So the first obvious question is, why did you want to become a foster parent?
Yeah, okay, it's a great question. I think it's something that a lot of people want to do, but again, it comes down to the capacity that you have and the support network, which we had. My husband and I had trouble having our own children, so both our biological children are IVF. And so when the third IVF round didn't take, we didn't feel like our family was complete, and so we wanted to take the path of looking into foster caring, and we took that journey, and it was a plunge into the deep end for sure.
Well, tell us about the actual journey. What is the process like?
So in Queensland, it's quite a lengthy process. I think it took us probably about 8 months from start to finish to be approved as foster carers, which is a really good thing because it is a tough role and you want to make sure you've got the right people doing it for the right reasons. So you go through a course where you learn about trauma and the effects and how to be a foster carer and about the role and the technical side of things. Then you sit through a board assessment where they basically look at your history. They ask you a lot of very prying questions about your past. And then, yeah, basically a board sits together and makes a determination on whether you're suitable. And the way that the system is now, that pretty much the date that happens, you'll expect within an hour of that being approved that you'll probably have a phone call to let you know that there's a child in need or multiple children in need that need a home.
Is that because the system is so overloaded?
Yes, absolutely. There are not enough carers and a lot of kids coming into care every day.
Now, like you said, you do have two of your own children. So how did you explain to your kids that we're going to have some other children walking through the house?
Yeah, so that's part of the training they put you through. So they involve your children in a lot of the interview process that you go through to see how they're going to adapt. I guess you explain it to them logically, but they're kids, they don't really understand the ongoing impacts of what they're about to introduce into their home. But we were lucky, ours were really willing and open to it from the start, but it certainly wasn't without their challenges.
Well, what were some of those challenges? Like, generally speaking, like, for both the family unit and not just the kids, but for, like, you and your husband and so forth, what were some of the challenges that you faced?
So our boys were quite young at the time. I'm trying to reflect back. It was about 4 years ago. So I think my youngest was about six, and the older of the two that came to live with us first was four, but they were sort of only 18 months apart. So that was really close. And these kids that come into care obviously have had their needs neglected in the past, and they often need a lot more attention. They're more, require more physical attention. They need lots of hugs. And that's quite confronting for your own children to have to share their mum essentially with somebody else. So yeah, there was absolutely some pressure from the family. And I think my husband, amazing, amazing father, but yeah, I think it was hard to have to share his biological children's mother with other kids. And I think, you know, that's something that was challenging the whole way through. It just something you don't get used to, and it's something that everyone needs to adapt to.
Fair enough, fair enough. And so if you had like a blank checkbook and a magic wand, what would be some of the things you would do to improve the foster system and how it all sort of works?
Wow, that is such a complex and difficult question, Gough, and I don't know what the answer is.
Well, the little things that could have made it easier for you as a foster parent, like things that the, I don't know, is it Child Protective Services or whatever they're called, is there anything that they could have done to make you as a foster parent make it easier for you, essentially?
Yeah, I think the best support for us that we ever received was when we'd get respite care. So that's basically when another set of carers would look after the boys for us while we sort of reconvened as a family unit again, and that was really, really important for our longevity as carers to have those breaks. But unfortunately, respite care is often not available because, again, they need to be approved foster carers. And so that's something that I'd implore to members of the public that can't be full-time foster carers for whatever reason, but have a want and a desire to support the system in some way, that you put your hand up and say, well, I'll take kids on weekends or, you know, for odd periods of time so that full-time foster carers can have that much needed break. And I think if there was access more to that would be really supportive for full-time carers.
Cool. Now let's chat a little bit about your time in the Defence Force.
Sure.
So why did you decide to join? What was the motivation?
Okay, so I went to a game of skirmish. I grew up on the Gold Coast, so it wasn't sort of a job pathway that many of my peers took. But I went and played skirmish. I looked fantastic in the green camo uniform, really loved rolling around in the dirt. And I was like, yeah, I want to do this for a job. So, yeah, I looked it up on the internet. I was like, this looks pretty good to me. And I enlisted. And
how old were you?
18.
Okay.
18. So I probably started the process of applying when I was 17, but that's, again, a lengthy process and got in just after my 18th birthday.
And what were some of your roles and responsibilities? Because I know you've done a few different things in regards to the ADF. So what were some of the things that you, job titles, I suppose, and responsibilities that you had?
Yeah, sure. So I started off as a driver. Shortly after that, I swapped over to become a medic. I served 16 years as a medic. Really enjoyed my time doing that. They qualify you as an enrolled nurse and you get the level of a diploma of paramedical science in that role, all trained through the Defence Force School of Health. Then I was starting to gravitate towards the classroom, really enjoyed instructing. And so I started to study a degree in education and I graduated that in 2019. I commissioned to the rank of captain and I became an education corps officer. So that's how I finished my career only a couple of months ago.
So what exactly, so for those who don't know, because obviously being a captain's a pretty big deal, what exactly would be your roles and responsibilities as a captain in the ADF?
So education corps officers are what are referred to as specialist officers. They come in with a special skill set. So rather than being predominantly hired as warfighters, we bring with us the qualifications of the degree that we have. So for me, it was in education. And so we worked in the curriculum level. So we would work in curriculum design and we would help structure the training system and make sure that the training's occurring at the right interval in a person's career and that the content's on point for what the delivery needs to be or the point of need.
So no rat-a-tat-tat for you. You're educating people on how to properly train the people that go rat-a-tat-tat.
Well, we're all soldiers first, so we all are trained to that basic level to be able to defend ourselves. So we still had 6 monthly weapons handling tests and shoots at the range. But yeah, predominantly my role wouldn't be on the front line as an education corps officer. We make sure that we're training and enabling the force to be able to deliver that effect.
But still, if anybody's listening and they want to mess with Shelley Curtis, she knows how to handle herself. Is that what you're telling us?
Something like that.
So what did serving actually mean to you? Because you did it for a long time. So 18, so you did it for like well over a decade. So what did serving mean to you?
Yeah, just shy of 20 years. And it meant a lot. My father was a Vietnam veteran, so I'd grown up attending Anzac Day ceremonies. And as trivial as I made out my enlistment story was, it did mean a lot, and I really enjoyed my service. It's an incredible way to grow up and to learn selflessness and sacrifice and to be part of something that's bigger than yourself. And I wouldn't change my career for anything. It was a great way to grow up and into the adult that I became.
Cool. And so then, but you left to join City Council. So what was the motivation behind joining City Council?
So, yeah, I was nearing that 20-year mark. I was starting to get a little bit itchy, ready for the next challenge. Didn't know what that looked like, but then our local councillor was successful in his bid to be appointed as the federal member for our area, and that left his councillor position vacated, and it just felt like one of those meant-to-be moments. I applied. There were 17 other applicants. Because it's within 12 months of the next elections for the local government, there was no by-election, and they self-appointed through council, and I was the successful applicant. So, and the rest is history, and now I have to go through campaign mode for March.
Well, before we do talk about your upcoming campaign, what are you currently doing on council in regards to, are you on any committees? If I want to build a big thumping high-rise in the middle of a historical landmark, are you the person that's going to come down and say, no, I don't think that's appropriate behaviour there, Goff?
Well, I am on the Planning and Environment Committee, so we get all the big ticket development applications through that committee. I'm also on Transport and Infrastructure, and I'm on the Lifestyle and Community Committee, which if I had to pick a favourite, that would be it, because I love working with community groups and sports groups. And I think that the Gold Coast lifestyle is why we live here, and so it's great to be on that committee.
You haven't got power hungry? You haven't decided? You don't just walk into cafes and say, give me stuff for free, I'm your councillor?
No, I'm still in survival mode. I'm still a deer in the headlights every day. So much to learn, but very grateful for the opportunity.
So you are enjoying it though?
I am. Predominantly I am. I think I will enjoy it more when I get more proficient. I think every day I've got to learn so much to take the next step forward. So I feel like I go backwards a little bit each day, but eventually that'll transition and there'll be no stopping me.
There'll be no stopping you. Crikey. Look out. She'll be mayor, then governor, and then prime minister, then in the UN. It's like the Boutros Ghali of the Gold Coast. So as you said, an election is coming up. What is your number one agenda item, Shelley? What's the number one thing you're campaigning on?
So I've kind of come to the realisation that people don't like being told what their priorities are. So I have just commissioned a survey that I plan to distribute to my entire division over the next 4 weeks. And basically I'm just calling on two simple questions. I mean, what do you want fixed in your local neighbourhood, and what would make the neighbourhood a better place to live? And if I can get as many people in our division to answer those two questions, it'll put me in a really great position to know exactly where I need to be focusing my attention.
So what are you hearing though? What's coming back?
So the survey only opened in the last 24 hours, so I haven't heard anything yet. But if I don't do it this way, I find it's more the squeaky wheels that come through my office as opposed to the genuine need for action. So that's why I've decided to do it this way, where I can get a more collective response.
Do you have any like goals though? Is there anything in particular that you personally would like to see?
Yeah, so probably the most common question asked of me when I was appointed was about the youth crime issue. And obviously people in local government tend to deflect that issue because there isn't a lot we can do. We don't have the powers of conviction, or we don't have the police to be able to deploy to protect our neighbourhoods against that. But I'm a big believer that community is where it starts. And I think if we can get good community groups and we can get the youth engaged and doing something promising and involved in something that's bigger than themselves, that is our best defence against youth crime in our area. So I want to empower our local community groups and our sports clubs to be delivering programs so that we can get these kids off the street and doing something productive with their time.
Do you think your role in the ADF as being an education captain situation where, and also, you know, the fact that when you were 18, you were serving and all that sort of stuff, do you think that's part of your thinking process? Is that where your thoughts sort of comes from? Because, like, that's what you did, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a very disciplined environment. But what I point out to other people is that it's also it's very strongly cultured and a very strong sense of belonging for anybody that serves and in uniform. And those two things have to go hand in hand because they can't work in isolation. So we can say, oh, we're going to get tougher on youth crime and we're going to bring in all these punishments. But if kids don't feel like they belong or they want to belong into a community, It doesn't work.
So how do you make them feel like they belong?
Well, that's how I need to empower our local groups to make sure that they have the facilities they need, that any kid that wants to join the soccer team can join the soccer team. Like it's not right if they get turned away because there's not the space on the field available or there's not enough coaches to be able to deliver. So we need to make sure that if kids are trying to get into clubs and trying to keep on the right path, that they have the opportunity to do so. And that's what I'm going to be passionate about.
Now, speaking of sport, you are one who enjoys the sporting activity, so to speak. You've done some Ironman racing, have you not?
I have.
So,
yes.
So what was the motivation putting your body through that sort of torture? Because when we're meeting Ironman, you did the Hawaiian Ironman, am I right?
I've done a Hawaiian Ironman distance. I did it in Port Macquarie, but yes, same event. So the 4 kilometre swim, 180 kilometres on the bike and 42 kilometre marathon run to finish.
And now I asked you this question because I already know that because Shelley and I have known each other a long time. I've asked you this question privately. I'm going to ask it now publicly. What was more painful, the Ironman or childbirth?
Oh, well, I had cesarean section, so I'm going to go the Ironman. not that's not a legitimate form of childbirth. It just wasn't acutely painful at the time.
Because it's 11 hours. We're talking you're racing for 11 hours.
Well, I'm very slow, so it was 13 hours and 15 minutes for me.
Crikey. And you've done it twice, have you not?
Yeah, I've done it once, but I've done probably five half Ironmans. I did the half Ironman in Cairns this year.
And you enjoy triathlons as well because you just came back from the Noosa Triathlon?
I did, yes.
And you smashed it, I hear?
I did well. I was proud. I was only 4 minutes slower than my best time, which, given my lead-up training of zilch, I was quite impressed to hold on to that time.
So with all of the things that you do, you know, like we've gone through a whole bunch of things that Shelley Curtis is all about, time management is obviously something that you need to be very good at. How does that go for you?
Yes, I am very meticulous on what I spend my time on. And if it's not something I value and something that's important to me, I just don't give it time. So I wasn't on social media up until my appointment in the last 3 months because I just don't see that as value for my time. You have to be really disciplined with it because I think it's the new commodity, like it's the new wealth. Your time is so precious and there's enough of it to spend on what you most value and what's most important to you, but there's not enough time to waste any of it.
No, absolutely. I agree 100%. Now, as you said, there is an election coming up in March. Now, there will be obviously all of your constituents will be listening to this podcast because Beer Nuts Productions podcast has a global reach. So what would be your message to those people in your electorate? Why should they vote for Shelley Curtis?
Look, I think I know the area really well. I was born and raised in Division 4, but I think it's my approach that I don't know what's best. I'm quite honest that, you know, I'm not going to come at you and tell you what you need and what the area needs and this is how we're going to do it. I'm all ears. I'm genuinely listening. I want to engage as many people as possible because that's where the answers come from. You know, I can't tell you as an individual what we need. I need to hear that from others, and that's exactly how I'll go into this role. And it'll be careful and cautious decision making based on as much information and data as I can garner. So if you want somebody like that, well, then vote for me.
Fair enough. Fair enough indeed. So if people want to learn more about Shelley Curtis, where can they go? What can they do?
So I've got a Facebook page now. I'm also on the gram, CR Shelley Curtis. We promulgate most of our information through that. But I've also got an e-newsletter, division4@goldcoast.qld.gov.au is my email address. So email that if you want to get on the e-newsletter. And yeah, look forward to engaging with you.
I should actually ask as well, do you have any the future you're going to, because, you know, you got yourself promoted through the ADF to captain. You're going to, you know, we start off as city councillor, then we go to mayor, then we go to state government, then federal government. Like, is this a world domination situation, Shelley?
Definitely not. I'm looking for any way to stay in the local area as possible. So part of my reason for transitioning from Army was all roads were leading to Canberra for me. And I am just so in love with our local area and I just want to be there forever. So I'd be very happy to fill the councillor role for as long as the public want me there.
Fair enough. Well, thank you so much for coming in today, Shelley. I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Goff. That was fun.
Was it?
Not nearly as scary as I thought it would be. You were very kind.
Well, I'll soon fix that. I have one final question. No, I don't at all. But this does bring us to the end of the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. Make sure you like and subscribe to the podcast. Leave a friendly comment. Rate and review. 5 stars is always good. Shelley would leave a friendly comment because you want a community and all of that sort of good stuff.
Absolutely. 5 stars.
That sounded very insincere. I'm only teasing. But yes, and of course, beernutsproductions.com is your one-stop shop for all your entertainment needs. So until next time, we will talk to you then.